Joining us once again for his regular chat, and that's Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Morning, Darren.
How are you?
Well, what's the weather like in Leeds?
Well, okay at the moment, but thundery later.
Oh.
So not great.
Oh, not to worry. Make the grass grow. Meanwhile, we will continue to enjoy our heat wave.
Okay. That makes me feel so much better.
I thought it would.
Yeah, it certainly does. KB, lots to talk about as ever. Let's start with Leeds United. Good draw for Leeds United against Burnley. Not a bad start to the season, really.
Well, first of all, it's a derby, so you can never tell what's going to happen at a derby, can you? Secondly, Burnley, they've just come down from the Premiership. Are a very well-run club. Patient supporters, loyal supporters, and a good manager, understated, and I think they will do well. And I think his comments, the manager was named Dietrich, I thought was very measured after the game. From the Leeds point of view, it was a hard win. It would be one of our hardest games this year. Two good goals. Draw probably a good result. 27,000, very encouraging. First time we played against good opposition this season, and it's looking good. Interesting to see how we get on tonight, because the Capital Cup looks to be going to be an upset. Well, that's the glory of the cup. I mean, 7 out of 24 Championship clubs knocked down the first round. That must be an absolute record. We've got Doncaster to overcome, which in theory we should, but again, in derbies you can never tell. It's making for an interesting week.
So he does make it an interesting week, and off the pitch, interesting as well. Transfer news and speculation will always be around Sam Byram until the transfer window closes. A number of Premier League clubs seem to be interested in him. Fans obviously want him to stay.
Yes, I mean, I thought it was a bit peculiar when I learned in recently that Massimo had offered an extended contract at reduced wages. I wouldn't have thought he was on very big money to start with, but he's one of the absolute stars put up to the Redfern era at the academy. He's very talented. I think he struggled because he had an injury beginning of last season, didn't he, which affected him a bit, but he's the kind of man you build your team around. He's a Yorkshireman, a Leeds man. He wants to stay here, so he should be snapped up and put into a 5-6 year contract to be on the safe side. Because the danger is that when his contract runs out next season, the end of next season, 2016, I think it's 2016, he can go out on a free transfer. He can leave on a free transfer, but because he's under 25, or he would be then, compensation would have to be paid and set by an independent tribunal. But I can assure you, it's always peanuts compared to the real value of the player. So I don't know why Massimo's delaying it. He should get Sam's. Sam wants to stay. And as I say, I think he's a future leader. And Massimo should get it sorted out, not be penny-wise and pound-foolish. Or centing-wide and euro-foolish. When we lost Johnny Howson, people often wonder why I sold Johnny Howson. Thing, if you go back and remember, he would not sign a new contract. And when I looked at his contract, he was 25 in the last few days of June that year, which meant, since his contract ran out on the 30th of June that year, and he was a free agent. and Leeds would get no compensation whatsoever. His agent was adamant he would not sign a new contract, even though he was a club captain. So if you remember, it was against Millwall in December. He injured himself in the Millwall penalty area. It wasn't a foul. No Millwall player was near him. He just fell over and fell awkwardly and damaged his ankle. So he was unfit. And Norwich came in and offered to buy him. And they took him even though he wasn't fit and didn't play for another month. And we got £1.8 million for him, which was a disgrace because he was a 5-6-7 minimum. But nothing we could do about it, particularly in view of the age gap. We just clicked outside the restriction by 3 or 4 days. And hadn't had a particularly... had an on-off career since. But the fact that he went for the money and he wanted to play in Premiership football. Despite the fact I said to him, well, you're the club captain, you get us up, he will be playing Premiership football. But it didn't work. So, Massimo, please, for the club's sake and for your sake, Don't mess about. Get the boy signed. There's one uncertainty less for the club.
Yeah, I think fans would be very happy that if Sam Byron does sign on for another extended stay at Elland Road. Just before we leave Leeds United...
He's a nice guy too.
Sorry?
I see he's a nice guy too.
Yeah, certainly seems to be. In the interviews I've seen with him, he certainly seems to be a nice guy. Before we move off Leeds United, we talked a couple of weeks ago about there was the Leeds United Museum, which was part of your plans for Elland Road, which has now been put on the shelf because we've got sort of more residents moved into parts of the East Stand here at Elland Road, a series of solicitors. And you wanted to make some more points on that.
Well, the only point about it I would make is that I agree with the idea of renting out surplus space, because you have to get income, have to earn income on the match days of a football club. After all the fans who are listening in or reading in. Could your firm open 25 days a year and make a profit? The answer is of course not. The football clubs are expected to do, which of course they can't. So that's why you have to look for external income that isn't dependent on match days. So the idea of letting Quendles in, solicited in, fair enough. Nice rent. Only problem, of course, is when I heard it was Quendles, this is a firm under great scrutiny at the moment, because the share price shot up, then it collapsed. They sold part of their business to an Australian company. And there's some investigation going to the moment, according to the financial papers. So I just hope that Massimo's made sure he's got a good rental agreement and perhaps some kind of guarantee or security or even got the rent up front. Great pity that they've done that, of course, because, as has been reported elsewhere, in April 2013... Suzanne and I offered to fund the museum, if you like, as a legacy, as we left. And didn't even get the courtesy of reply from the Arabs. And now it's an opportunity lost. There you are. That's one of the legacies of the GFH raid. Incidentally, no news about David Hay lately, is it?
No, very quiet.
June, July, August, he's now into his 16th month of incarceration. Without trial, without charge, and without interrogation. Which is an absolute disgrace in Dubai. David Hay said he got no complaint against the Dubai authorities, but he would say that, wouldn't he? If he's stuck inside the jail. I think the behaviour of GFH is absolutely disgraceful, and the behaviour of the British government is even worse. and absolutely nothing about it. It's about time Prince Charles made an intervention, as he has done in other matters in that area. So just keep pressure up, keep sending your Twitters in and complaining, and sending them to your MP. David Hay may be a crook, but I don't think he is. He may be an absolute villain, which I don't think he is. He's entitled to a fair trial and a fair hearing, because at the moment, it's that innuendo and smear by insinuation and allegation.
Moving on, KB, to some other news that's been breaking over the last sort of like week or so, and the charity Kids Company. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. They closed down suddenly last week. They received a £3 million government lifeline, which was on the order of the ministers.
They needed 800,000 and gave it to us at the start.
Mm.
And then the government tried to get the money back, unsuccessfully, I think. So now the thing's gone into administration liquidation. So there's nasty stories coming out. For example, the staff were saying, however, some of the staff, whistleblower, alleged that they were told to shred files and dump documents. Get rid of them all. I wonder why. This Iranian woman makes two-ton Tessio Shea look in the shade, talks incessantly on every kind of media the opportunity can, but she's clearly totally incompetent, however well-meaning she may be. Of course, at £90,000 a year, plus £40,000 a year for her personal chauffeur, because she doesn't like using public transport, and her chauffeur's school fees being paid, you wonder quite where the charity money is going to. That's a peculiar setup anyway. I don't know how the charity commissioners didn't find out about this earlier, but then, of course, they've probably fooled by all the eminent people who allowed their name to be put on the Board of Trustees. I'm afraid it looks good on the CV, but this fellow, Alan Yentob, who, purely by chance, runs the BBC, he must be feeling a complete idiot now. Handing out packets of money and Fridays, the smell of marijuana and other things floating around the offices. I don't know. Oh, and apparently if they were treating one kid and he had six in his class, they counted the other five as also being their patients, because they said because his presence in their presence, the benefit would flow. It's a gibberish in my life. And David Cameron fell for it. Supposed to be mesmerised by her. But I thought the one thing that Prime Minister shouldn't be is mesmerised by anything. Have a healthy cynicism for anything that's proposed to him, put up to him. And once, from this occasion, the civil servants were right. They opposed giving the money, and apparently were overruled by 10 Downing Street. Not very good. Meanwhile, Mr. Cameron's spreading the world and talking about worldwide corruption and stopping this and stopping that and stopping the other. Meanwhile, he's got a problem down in Calais, which he apparently seemed totally indifferent to, even though they're apparently taking immediate and urgent steps. Sounds more like a dance routine, actually getting anything done. Serious. And all this linked up with the benefits, of course, which National Health Service is a total mess. Can't altogether blame the politicians for this. I'm sure it's the civil servants, it's their full-time job and career to make it run. As you probably read this week about, as people will know, if you're going abroad to Europe on a holiday, you can get a card which certifies that you're entitled to free medical treatment in the European countries. But we also issue a card, which means that foreigners can get treatment in England. In fact, what's been happening is that people have been coming across from Eastern Europe on a day trip, getting a card and going back home, and then getting treatment for whatever problems they've got in their home countries, and the bills have been sent to England. £750 million was paid out last year to reimburse foreign countries, which is just obviously an abuse of the system. Yet, let me tell you the story the other way. I have a grandson, Anglo-Irish, though born in Ireland. He's been in England for the last 2 years working. He's a skilled joiner and carpenter. Been working on Battersea Power Station. Had an industrial injury affecting one of his hands. So they had treatment in the NHS. They sent him a bill for 600 quid. When he protested, he said, well, you're an immigrant. You don't get this treatment for you. He didn't produce his pay slip to show how he paid tax every week since he'd come here, come to England. And also he paid his National Health Service contribution every week since he'd been here. And the guy said, no, you're a migrant. You've got to pay £600. Of course, he's not going to. He's going to just take it all away. But it makes you wonder, what kind of intellect is there running the NHS that can come to that conclusion and take that decision? And in view of the foreigners that are working in the National Health Service, we're wondering if the gentleman or lady concerned are immigrants themselves. There you are, shambolic Britain. And that's after 5 years and trying to put Labour's mess right. A lot of work to do there, a lot of way to go.
Yeah, it took a shambolic Britain, and you must obviously get your comments on what's been happening with farmers. Most notably recently, it seems to be signified by the dairy farmers and the protests in certain supermarkets about the price of milk. But, you know, it's brought to a head the plight of farmers as a whole.
Well, I think the fact that the first thing should happen is all the big catering companies, all the big hotels, all the big restaurants, and all the little small restaurants should be buying local food. Not through, but should be buying them from the farmers. If you remember, a few years ago, there was some kind of problem with English farming, and I instructed Leeds United Catering Department only buy local food from local farmers, if at all possible. So I think we're buying sausages, cheese, milk, cream, butter, and so on and so forth, as far as possible, from local farms. And there are lots of farms now who are now, you know, starting up and trying to make their end products. And I'll take a little time to tell you what happened to me in 1981. I came back to England from Monte Carlo and bought a farm in Buckinghamshire, a place called Beaconsfield. And it was a dairy farm. And those times you had the milk marketing board. The milk farmer used to milk the cows. Milk marketing board would send the lorries around to get the milk every day, take it to a central distribution and bottling plant, and they would sell it on. And I think this was a quango set up before the war. And once again, at that time, farmers were distressed. Anyway, I was looking, I can't remember now, it was 30 years ago, but I think I was getting about, about 20p a litre or something like that, maybe 25p a litre for my milk. Then when I went to the local Waitrose, saw it being sold there at 20p a pint. There's 2.2 pints in a litre. And I thought, well, somebody's getting making too much out of this. So I decided I'd do it myself, get out the middleman. Now, the milk marketing board, of course, were anxious to preserve high standards, did their best to discourage me from doing it. But when I used to say I was going to do it, then also, to be fair, was then very helpful, again, to make sure we maintained the high standards required for production of milk. So we started, first of all, bottling our own milk. Those Tetra Paks were one of the first. We were the first farm in England to use those Tetra Paks. Now, those sort of oblong plastic milk containers that fit into the door of the fridge. And we started selling to local restaurants, delicatessens, and hotels. Direct. So immediately we nearly doubling our price for not a great deal of more effort. But you always make money in business by value added, added value to your products. So we started making ice cream. And I say myself, it was the best ice cream in the country, Grange Farm. They ordered from 200-300 miles away. And they started making yogurt. And then skim milk. We drank skim milk all week, then paid us £5 a gallon for our cream, which they needed to put on their apple tart at their dinner party over the weekend. So she thought, housewife thought she was losing weight and feeling good. She then put it all back on with her cream at weekend, our double cream at weekends. And we made a good profit all round. And then on top of that, of course, we cut out the middleman on supplying our foodstuffs, food for the animals. We made our own, and we saved money on that. So I would urge all small farmers, or big farmers for that matter, have a go. There's a lady somewhere in North Yorkshire on a farm, and she's making ice cream at the dairy, at the farm gate. And it's a great success. So come on, farmers. You're right to complain and moan and groan, but you'll always be at the mercy of the supermarket. So get off your bum and start thinking of ways you can exploit that very valuable commodity. Find out how to make cheese, how to make yogurt, how to make clotted cream and everything else. And set it in farmers' markets and go around banging on the doors of local shops and restaurants. And come on, Yorkshire consumers and housewives, buy local, go to the farmers markets and avoid the supermarkets, because, and this is a message to the farmers, you'll always be at the mercy of the supermarket. So you've got to be independent if you can. Have a go. And my final plea is to Massimo at Leeds United. You've now got rid of Compass Catering. You've taken the thing back in-house. To make yourself popular, instruct Mr. Spencer, who I gather is running, to come back to run all the catering, Yorkshire milk, Yorkshire sausages, Yorkshire cheese, and Yorkshire everything else is made in Yorkshire. And you might find it cheaper, as well as better. What about our box competition?
Very good point, sir.
Sheffield Wednesday, 28th of August, and Brentford, the 12th of September. Now, you know the details. I'll run it through briefly, and you can give me all the technical details.
Okay.
We have a luxury box, number 44, on the fourth floor of the East Stand at Ellen Road. And every home game, have 10 tickets to give away. So ordinary fans can come and watch their favourite club in a day of luxury. You come early, the big screens on in our box wall, we can see the early kick-off games and so the other. Get a great three-course meal, or is it four-course? Might have gone up with inflation, I can't remember now. And a drink, and outside you out, go outside and watch the game, the best view, best angle in the ground. It's like a chess piece. You really see the moves building up. A great atmosphere. Have a great time. And you know, be our guests. 10 lucky people. All you have to do is to answer a simple question. You get it right, your name goes into a hat. 10 people's names are drawn out at random, and they're our guests for the day. We've got to pay for your transport and getting there. So, over to you, Darren.
Okay, for tickets to the box on the Leeds United Sheffield Wednesday game, and if you want to win a seat in the executive box for this, answer this question. Sheffield Wednesday last beat Leeds United at Hillsborough in January 2014. What was the score? Was it A, 6-0? Was it B, 2-1? or was it C, 1-0? Text YORKS, that's YORKS, and your answer to A, B or C to 84383. Text costs £1 plus your standard message rate, and entry to the competition closes on the 20th of August. Winners will be chosen on the 21st of August, and you can find all the T's and C's on radioyorkshire.co.uk. Good luck to everybody. KB, as always, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much.